Hey, it's Dr. Jamie, and red light therapy has become the latest trend in bio-optimization and in the beauty space, and you can find red light laser therapy offered at dermatology clinics, promising to reverse the signs of aging in the skin, treat acne, promote scar healing. Red light helps your mitochondria, you guys, and the mitochondria is in the skin cells, and it helps absorb those photons. And if we can remember from high school biology, the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. It generates the energy for the cell to perform its functions. Some of the reported benefits of red light therapy include reduction of fine lines and wrinkles, treatment of acne, healing of scars, treatment of seasonal affective disorder, increasing the healing of wounds, reducing painful joint inflammation, and increasing the recovery time between your strenuous workouts. If you want the red light I'm using, you're going to want to shop Cozy Red Lights. At Cozy, they offer simple, non-invasive at-home red light therapy devices that are easy to use and effective. Their devices emit 660 to 850 nanometers of red light and near-infrared waves that are clinically proven to penetrate deep into the skin to exert effects on a cellular level. You can use my code DRFIT, D-R-F-I-T, to start your red light journey today. Go check out the Cozy Red Lights. To the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Jamie and welcome back to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. It is so great to have you here today. Today's guest is Dr. J.C. Folkers. He is a doctor of chiropractic medicine, functional medicine. He's an author, educator, and co-founder of Blokes and Joy. He's a graduate of the University of Nebraska at Lincoln with a degree in exercise science and sports medicine. That's a degree I was going to go get, but then they got rid of the program, you guys, before I, before I came. He completed his doctorate degree in chiropractic from Cleveland Chiropractic College. He has completed postgraduate studies in areas of clinical nutrition, rehabilitative exercise, and functional medicine. Dr. Folkers has owned and operated several clinics across the country that emphasize and specialize in areas of treatment, including hormone replacement therapy, peptide therapy, regenerative medicine, weight loss, cognitive therapies, thyroid conditions, autoimmune, diabetes, functional testing, and DNA testing. He's worked with a wide variety of patients, all the way from professional athletes working to increase their performance to everyday people with various chronic health conditions. Dr. Folkers is the creator of his own methodology of treatment, referred to as the RISEN method, in which he's used to help countless patients reclaim their health with his unique functional medicine approach. Using holistic and root cause approaches, he addresses the core of underlying barriers to health, which allows individuals to thrive and live their best lives. You guys, he also is just a regular human, just like me, and he is a girl dad to six amazing daughters. He's got three grandkids and a husband to an awesome wife. Dr. Folkers, welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have to talk about being a girl dad to six daughters. I have three of my own. It's definitely not an easy feat.
And we have to give you some credit because you delivered one of my grandbabies, my grandson, the youngest.
This is a full circle moment, you guys.
That's so cool.
I love what I do. I really do. And it's such an amazing opportunity for me to be involved in that part of people's lives, because in medicine, there's so much doom and gloom. And it's part of the reason I went into obstetrics, because it's like the one happy area. Now, generally happy, obviously. It is an area of medicine when things go wrong, they go very wrong and can be so sad, but it is seriously an honor every single time that I get to be part of that for these families and part of yours forever and ever.
Thank you for that. So being a girl dad it's been fun. I kept thinking I was going to have a boy, and then the fourth was a girl,
and another one,
fifth was a girl, and then the sixth was, and that's it. So, but it's so rewarding, you know, girls are so affectionate, and it kind of, you know, makes me feel, I guess, closer to my feminine side. But, there's never a dull moment in our house, and, I wouldn't change it for the world. I love it.
Yeah. People are always like, are you going to have another one? You guys, I'm telling you right now, Fit and Fabulous Baby Factory is shut down. we'd probably have like seven girls, and it's not that we don't want more children. We would love it. It's just like the reality of, life and traveling and doing all those things. So we're very blessed. We've got three amazing daughters. So, okay. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you did, chiropractic medicine. Mm-hmm. And, but now have taken kind of a different trajectory. Let's talk a little bit about just the kind of like state of medicine in our world and why you practiced what I would consider more non-traditional.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely. And so it kind of really piqued my interest in more of like the functional medicine route. And it actually started when I was in chiropractic school. I was in California. My my daughter Callie, who is the one that you were her physician, and we were on the beach, and she had this kind of like white spot on her back, and I was like, "What is that?" And I didn't know if a little piece of a drop of like sunscreen just got right there and didn't get anywhere else. And you know, long story short, we found out she had vitiligo, and so as a worried dad, I was really starting to research vitiligo. What is it? What can I do to help it? And all of the Google searches I did at the time said there's nothing you can do. You know, cortisone cream, it's an autoimmune condition. There's really no cure. So I really started to kind of delve into all the alternative treatments, ways to optimize her health as much as possible. And over time, healing her gut, making sure she's getting adequate nutrition, it started to improve, and the spots, she even started having them on her face. They started to dissipate. And so I really started to really get really kind of honed in and focus on autoimmunity, gut health, you know, and look at the root causes of these things. And lo and behold, my other daughter developed type 1 diabetes a few years later. So another autoimmune condition. And then my wife developed was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. So then my sister had autoimmune. So all these different autoimmune conditions started to pop up. So I guess you could kind of consider it the mess to meaning, the pain to purpose, you know, the test to testimonial kind of scenario, where I took those opportunities to learn and to really develop a passion for like digging deeper instead of just treating symptoms. Cause there really is no such thing as an autoimmune specialist, you know, in medicine, right. In the traditional treatment.
There's like rheumatologists.
There's like
allergy immunologists. Right. There's not really like,
right.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, take these immunosuppressant medications or prednisone or things like that, that didn't seem to really help the body function. And so in my research, I started really working with hundreds and even thousands of patients that would come to me in the functional medicine realm. And it seemed to me like the root cause of a lot of this stuff, or the way I would approach it, would be lifestyle, diet, nutrition, healing the gut, you know, and pretty much all the pillars that you know, outlined in your book. And so those are the things that move the needle the most.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just about to ask, like, what is traditional medicine doing wrong? And it's like, it's addressing these lifestyle factors. And I think part of it is that doctors just aren't trained in a way that gives them those tools. I don't think it's that they, you know, don't care. Right. I just think that, and I think too, that behavior change is really hard for people. I mean, it's 100%. Like, it's the golden like $1 million nugget, you know, and most patients can come in and tell me, steak and broccoli is healthier than chicken nuggets and French fries. But it's like, how do you get somebody to like actually do that?
Right.
Is the kicker. So let's kind of, cause I would rather hear you kind of like unpack these pillars. So let's talk a little bit about diet. Like where are most people really missing the mark when it comes to like autoimmune conditions and diet?
Well, obviously, as you know, the standard American diet itself really kind of lends itself to setting everyone up for failure. It has the bad fats, it's high in carbohydrates. It, you know, the food industry, they unfortunately put a lot of hidden sugars in so many foods. In fact, a figure I recently heard that the sugar industry like annually their revenue was like $1.3 trillion.
Yeah.
You know, and so the amount of money spent on addressing those metabolic conditions that most likely are caused by sugar consumption is like $2.4 trillion. So if you look at those two numbers, it's a very lucrative type of industry. And so I've seen from a dietary standpoint, people just like are becoming programmed to want those foods that their body craves. Which is why 88% of Americans, they're estimating, is insulin resistant.
Yeah.
And that's creating this like, oh, I need to kind of feed this sugar craving. And even though they're not aware that they're consuming so much sugar, because it's in hidden, anything processed, there's like hidden sugars and yogurts and different things like that, that you think are healthy.
Yeah.
So I've seen just in general, you know, most Americans are taught to follow a diet that sets them up for failure, unfortunately. And so it's, like you said, it's really hard to kind of sit down and like, okay, this food guide pyramid that you've been taught that you're supposed to follow is completely wrong. And let's kind of like start, I don't really like to educate people to trash, you know, to start from ground zero, but like, let's start to make small changes and meet you where you are. And over time, and it takes time.
Yeah, I just saw something the other day that was talking about, I've been really diving down this whole pathway of like behavior change, because I just think that the mental side of it is, like I said, that's where the fruit is, because right. Most people can say, yeah, sugar's bad for me, right? But, and yes, it is one thing to be educated to like know how to read a nutrition label, because it's not just sugar on the back of it, right, that they're looking for. There's like so many other hidden ingredients, and they'll call it like organic sugar or like agave, right. Or right there. But I was reading this thing that we're actually consuming less sugar these days than we were even 10 years ago. But what we always have to ask, what we're trading in the diet, and what we're doing is we're eating more corn products, more rice products, and a lot more chicken than we are beef. So we're eating a lot less sugar and a lot less beef, but we continue to blame things on beef and saturated fat and these types of things.
No, that's a good point you made. I think so many patients, when I talk about like sugar, like, oh, I don't eat any sugar. Then you're right to your point.
Like, I don't eat candy.
Right. They think, why don't I have a bowl of candy next to me? You know, but it's like, oh, let me back up. All the starchy foods that you're consuming, you know, the breads, the pastas, the corn chips,
but it's whole wheat bread.
Right.
Whole
wheat bread. Yeah. And it's like, okay. So in fact, it is those starchy foods that cause this increase in blood sugar, that cause this increase in insulin. And then when the blood sugar drops, you're hungry again. So you're going after that sandwich or those starchy. But yeah, you're right to your point. There's not a lot of sugar consumption, but it is still at the end of the day broken down into glucose
and carbohydrates. It's crazy. Like, I'm a very low carb person, consciously avoiding sugar, bread, you know, these types of things, but I'll put in my macros for the day. And at the end of the day, like, I'm like, oh, I'm at 50 carbs. And I was like avoiding carbs. Like it's like, it's crazy, right? You know, yep. Like even when you're eating like real whole foods, you know, how that can kind of add up. And I think that for most people that are eating real whole foods, it's impossible to eat a high carb diet. I mean, if you're just eating whole foods, which I think everybody between vegan, vegetarian diets and carnivore diets, like everybody agrees, like the less processed it is, the less ingredient list, which is like real whole foods, which is how my kind of journey started actually, was like with Whole30. If you're just eating those foods and your carbs are just coming from fruits and vegetables, I mean, it's impossible to eat, you know, a high carb diet. You have to add whole grains like quinoa and those types of things in. But even that, I mean, you're probably only talking, you know, 150 carbs a day, which is still pretty low carb. So, okay. So what other lifestyle factors besides diet, when it comes to like autoimmune conditions, when you're talking about lifestyle, like what other things are people not thinking of?
So then other things would be, of course, sleep is so, so important. Quality sleep. So many people they're not getting good quality sleep. That's optimal for, you know, for healing the gut, for overall brain health, for detoxification, stress control. You know, stress comes from all forms. There's, you know, emotional stress, there's physical stress, there's chemical stress. There's so many things our bodies don't know the difference between those stresses. And it's oftentimes I feel when I'm working with patients on the diet, on the sleep, on adding in, you know, exercise, the ones that don't get better, the ones that don't improve, and I'm always banging my head against the wall, what is it? It's oftentimes some emotional component that they have not been able to overcome. Mm-hmm. So that's another super important component to overall wellness, which is not really focused on that much in, you know, and emphasized in medicine. So
yeah, it's like when we look at behavior, and we keep coming back to this, yeah, like, I mean, idea of really behavior is. Change. When we look at behavior change, you know, they look at who is successful, you know, like 100 people attempt to do, you know, XYZ, lose 100 pounds, let's mm-hmm. say, right? And they look at the people that, I mean, people have studied this. And yes, like grit, mental fortitude, discipline, like, right, all these words that would be on a Michael Jordan sign in your bedroom as like a kid. Those attributes certainly do make people really successful. But one thing that they have really identified and that I personally resonate with my own story, is that these people said they needed a new identity. Mm. And it's funny when people ask me on the podcast, like, where did Dr. Fit and Fabulous come from? It literally was like on my couch one night at 8 p.m. I was like, it was a title that just like embodied what I thought I really was, but I wasn't feeling it. And I think that that's important for people to hear, is that when you are ready to make these changes in your life, it's like, just clean the table off. Mm-hmm. You have a blank canvas. Like, who are you? Because a lot of the behaviors that we do on a day in, day out basis are because of something that happened in our life, a story that we're telling ourselves. And if your internal language, like your internal hard drive, is I'm a fat, overweight, sad 50-year-old menopausal woman, that is how that will play out in your life. Totally. Like, that language turns into action. And so for a lot of people, like we've said repeatedly here, they know exactly what they're supposed to do, but they don't know how to do it. And so you really have to change that internal language first. Like, that's where the magic happens.
And along those same lines, when you probably have heard this, when people receive a diagnosis of some sort of like an autoimmune condition or whatever,
I know exactly where you're going with this.
Like, manifest that in that diagnosis. And it's been shown that when individuals are, not healthy, they have a diagnosis, that causes a stress. And in having constant activation of the sympathetic nervous system, it kind of creates a more of a self-centered personality type. Like, I need you to carry my groceries. I need you to open the door for me. Uh-huh. I need people to do this for me, that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, 100%, having that identity, shift, or not becoming the diagnosis.
Yeah.
Another thing along the lines of weight loss too, is I think a lot of people they feel like they're failures because the many times that they've tried losing weight, and unfortunately a lot of the programs that have been marketed to us have been failures for many people. Cutting your calories and, oh, I lost a little bit, I lost 10 pounds here, but then I gained back 20. Mm-hmm. And then they'd feel like, well, why try this again? Because I failed it over and over again, which is, when we prescribe the GLP-1 products that we can talk about soon, I don't want to let people think that this is a magic pill or product mm-hmm. that's going to get you to lose weight. It's the habits.
You are the game changer.
Yeah.
This is a facilitator.
It's a facilitator. This is a catalyst that's going to help you like see results in areas that you may have not seen, to experience wins. And then they kind of feel like, oh, I'm seeing weight coming off and I'm feeling different. I'm looking differently. But it's like, do the work,
Yeah.
Prioritize protein, be active, stay hydrated, get that sleep. And when they're doing that, those actions for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and they adhere to that, that's when it becomes their new identity.
Yeah. I hear patients all the time at my clinic who say things like, oh, I'm tired or XYZ because of my Hashimoto's, or, oh yeah, I'm dealing with this because of my MTHFR mm-hmm. mutation, right. Or it's like this, you know,
all the time
title that they wear, and they use it as an excuse. Yeah. Yes. Instead of like,
well, it kind of goes along the lines of, it's frustrating where people oftentimes don't want to, or aren't ready to take responsibility for, and that gives them that excuse. And I tell patients oftentimes, some people look at me crazy. I say, I ask them, like, who do you think the doctor of the future is? It's you. It's the patient should be the doctor of the future, because you have to be accountable and you have to take responsibility for your health, because like you say, nobody's going to,
can hire the biggest, smartest minds in the world.
And like you said earlier, doctors mean well. It's not, their training trains them, unfortunately, to kind of like fix problems, and the problems oftentimes come from poor choices, poor lifestyle choices. And it gets to a point where people basically delegate their health to this to this physician, to this doctor. And in our system is where the problem lies, because we have doctors that are specialists in this area, but people fail to understand that, like, your body is not compartmentalized.
The arm bone is connected to the chest bone.
Right? Like, everything affects everything.
Yeah.
And that's why I've, like, really kind of focused and honed in on, like, some of the things that, and hormones and peptides that do affect every cell in the body, which is why insulin is one of those. And it's one that's near and dear to me, because I have a, once again, daughter that's a type 1 diabetic. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for insulin, she wouldn't be alive. And, you know, in fact, none of us would be alive if it wasn't for insulin. However, it too much insulin is what causes all these different health problems that people.
Yeah, I think people don't realize we have receptors all over our body for a lot of these peptides, a lot of these hormones, like estrogen, right? Mm-hmm. People talk about, oh, estrogen replacement is for hot flashes and night sweats. Well, we have estrogen receptors in our brain, in our thyroid, in our bones, in our heart, literally in every organ. And so it's, we can't get, you know, so myopic to think that, you know, what you were talking about basically in medical specialties is that your cardiologist is, you know, only in charge of your cholesterol, and what your cholesterol and heart function is has nothing to do with any other organ system, you know, in the body. And it's, they're all connected. I want to go back to this idea. You were talking about stress, and something came to mind that I wanted to come back to. I was recently talking to this very brilliant woman, Dr. Elena Gross, and she is she studies migraine, basically. And I was listening to her speak at this conference a couple of months ago, and she was talking about how when you get a migraine, the body is perceiving stress. And I loved the way she said it. She basically said, if the mitochondria is under stress, mm-hmm. it doesn't know if your boss yelled at you, or if you just ran 100 miles, or if you don't have enough magnesium, you know, in the mitochondria to do what it's supposed to do. It just perceives it as stress. Yep. It doesn't know if it's physical, psychological, you know, whatever.
That's the difference.
And so that is why stress can impact so many different systems. And I think stress just gets blown off as people are like, oh yeah, just like take some deep breaths, like don't be stressed. But like, it is a major driver of chronic disease.
100%. In fact, you know, like when we talk about like things like insulin resistance, for example, we always like identify, oh, that's when you eat too many carbs. That's high, you know, blood sugar. That's, you know, I don't do that. One other common cause of insulin resistance is high cortisol, is stress, like you said. So chronic stress, there can be individuals that have a low, low carbohydrate diet, but because they're so stressed, because we're humans, we can, you know, get stressed out in traffic. We can just be sitting, you know, in a room by ourselves and get stressed out about something, and just by our own thoughts.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, our body doesn't know the difference if you're, you know, if you got stung by a bee, or if you, you know, fell down, or if you're thinking of something that hasn't even happened or never will happen. Those things will create a physiologic change in your body that can and will cause blood sugar changes and metabolic changes and all those things. So it's all so important to just kind of maybe, you know, practice stress reduction, whether that be breathing techniques or, or exercise obviously is a great way, and doing things to kind of mitigate that.
Yeah. I like to think of it as like the proverbial seesaw. So basically, you know, stress is actually a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like exercise is a form of stress, purposeful stress, right? Like sauna therapy, ice baths, all the things that I like, all the torture I like to recommend to people, but they're purposeful stressors. They create this hormetic stress inside the body, and then that's supposed to build, you know, this resiliency for us. But back to the seesaw analogy, is that stress is good in small amounts, but we have to understand how to recover from it. And these are the things that you're talking about, like breath work, meditation, getting good sleep. And so it's looking at your life and kind of seeing like where those imbalances are, because stress is always going to happen and it's good for it to happen. But we have to figure out how to create more resiliency from it, because if the seesaw is constantly tipped in one direction, you had mentioned this earlier and maybe you can expand on it.
Yeah.
It's just constant activation of the sympathetic nervous system. So I always think of the seesaw, this stress seesaw, as like the balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic. Will you kind of expand on that for people? Because I think in the chiropractic world, that's totally your ballpark.
Yeah. And I guess another way to kind of like think of it is like a bucket. You know, stress, like all those things that you talked about, you know, and it's a combination of lack of parasympathetic response, you know, doing things to, you know, calm you down, rest and digest, meditation, breathing and breath work, getting adequate sleep, and But overstimulation of sympathetic, whether it, whether that be from all the things we talked about, but stress, there's something called allostatic load. So your body reaches a breaking point where, and it could be, and that breaking point could be over exercise. You know, there's a lot of people that think, and exercise is great, like you said, but there's
it's a real thing. You can over exercise.
There's a lot of people overtraining.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I see, unfortunately, sometimes I'll go to the gym, there's the same guy on the same treadmill. I feel like he's never left. He's always, and he hasn't lost one bit of weight. In fact, I hear his like feet slapping on the treadmill. I feel sorry for those people because nobody has come along to teach him how to properly like exercise, you know, for him. But there's a point where stress accumulates and you reach this breaking point where then you just need to kind of really, really focus on that. And that's where there's so many things you can do in like lifestyle wise, but there's also adaptogenic herbs you can try to onboard, like ashwagandha and different supplements and things like that, different things you can remove from your diet, like sugar, inflammatory foods. So it's a combination of like really managing that and trying to kind of keep that bucket from overflowing, if you will.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you can over-exercise, you can oversleep.
All the
things that we talk about are good. Like you can spend too much time in the sauna. You can spend too much time in the ice bath.
Too much time in the sun.
Yeah. There's always this kind of perfect little, you know, you think of the target and you don't want to get, you know, too far out. Or these things can actually become harmful. So, that's super important to realize for people. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, let's shift away from diet and lifestyle and talk about, awesome interventions that you and I probably use. So you talked a little bit about, doing like regenerative medicine or like rehabilitative, you know, things like that. What is that area of medicine? What modalities are we talking about there?
Yeah, so the modalities that I've used, I mean, there's peptide therapies, there are therapies that help specifically regenerate joints, whether it's, you know, in the spine, the knees. So there's stem cell therapy, exosomes. One peptide that I have become very fond of is called BPC-157, and it stands for Body Protective Compound. It's actually derived from gastric juices and gastric secretions.
Yeah, it comes from the gut.
Comes from the gut. And it's one of those products that it doesn't lose that much efficacy, whether you take it orally or inject it. I've had injuries I've had disc herniations in my neck, torn ligaments all over my shoulder, my knee. I've injected BPC right in there, and it's helped regenerate these areas that like just were not healing. So it's just amazing, you know, and basically what these things are doing is you're putting them in your body and they're like signaling compounds that actually allow your body to heal, on their own. Cause as we age, we start to lose, you know, stem cell production or, you know, actually the number of stem cells and we lose our ability to heal. So we're actually putting healing potential, whether it be stem cells or certain peptides. There's another one, TB-500, that also helps with angiogenesis, you know, blood flow. And so these are things that just, once again, they're just kind of agents that help your body do what it already knows how to do. And so that's how peptides differ from medications, because these peptides and these stem cells are more guiding your body to help them do and function what they already know how to do versus medications kind of like inhibit something and kind of like where it's stopping inflammation, but oftentimes have many side effects.
Yeah. So there are some pharmaceuticals that are peptides, and we're going to talk about a few of them. But like insulin, you guys, is a peptide, right? Okay. And so they have basically a receptor, and they attach to that receptor and then get your body to do, you know, what it's supposed to do as opposed to giving the end product, you know, per se. So,
correct.
BPC-157, I love this peptide. I actually learned about BPC-157 when I was filming for Titan Games.
Oh, wow.
People may not remember this, but after Titan Games, I tore my tricep. I came home with this like horrid injury. I had like blood, like a huge bruise, like down the back of my arm. I could barely lift my arm above my head and pull on anything. And I thought it was actually something like in my rotator cuff, but there was a lot of CrossFitters on Titan Games. And I actually learned, peptides must be very pervasive in the CrossFit world because they were like, they knew all the things. And that's where I learned about it. And so I actually used BPC-157 when I was healing my
super cool
my tricep. And, at the time, one of our co-medical director here at Upgrade was in CrossFit. And so I was talking to him about it, and he had had this nagging shoulder injury and he could not do a strict pull-up. And so, you know, he tried it too. And we were just both like really amazed. And so I've been doing, you know, so much more training kind of in this area of medicine, because I do think it works. It's incredible.
I feel like that should be the direction that that medicine is going, more of the peptide therapy route, because like I said, it's like, you know, all these different peptides, we have tons of peptides in our bodies. So it's like little chains of amino acids. So they're going to these receptors and like basically it's helping the body do what it already knows how to do more efficiently. And another good benefit of BPC is that it it's because it's derived from the gut, it has so many good gut benefit, healing benefits. So individuals that have, you know, peptic ulcer issues, leaky gut, gastrointestinal problems. I mean, I have so many stories and testimonials I've heard where patients have been taking proton pump inhibitors for years, and then they start taking BPC-157, and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't have the GERD anymore. I'm not having these symptoms. My digestion's better. People make weird comments like, oh, my poop looks healthier and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, it does so many things, because once you start to heal the gut, I mean, things with the gut brain connection, the brain functions better. Inflammation starts to kind of get more under control. But like also to your point, you can inject it or put it in local areas, triceps, shoulders, you know, musculoskeletal injuries. I had a patient who had a really bad Achilles injury and injected in there. And the doctor that he had treating him was like, what, how does this heal so fast?
Yeah.
So you hear all these cool stories, but it's just, these are just little compounds that help your body function better.
Yeah. I was reading Tony Robbins' new book, Life Force. Is that what it is?
Yep.
And he was telling the story about his shoulder, you know, going down to South America and doing stem cell therapy in his shoulder, and these American doctors, and let's be real, Tony Robbins has access to like any doctor he wants. And he got opinions from multiple people that basically were like, the only way to fix this is with surgery. And so he went down to South America because stem cells and exosomes and things like that are much less regulated in other places than they are in the US. And he got these injections and infusions, and it like completely healed. And he was like, and the doctors were just mind blown. And that's not the first story. It's not like this is a one-off. Like I hear this over and over and over, but in the United States, a lot of these things are cash pay. So they're not available to everybody. You know, we'll see where medicine goes. It's very political,
totally.
Very political. Yeah. Okay. So, your current venture in life is with these clinics, Blokes and Joy. Tell us a little bit about them and like what they offer people.
Yeah, totally. So, we about almost 2 years ago launched initially a company geared towards men's health. So we call it Blokes, and it's, you know, looking at men that,
where does his name come
yeah,
from?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like that cheeky, like, you know, I guess in European countries that, you know, hey, bloke, you know, instead of like, it's like the version of their version of dude, I guess, but I don't know. I didn't want to call it dudes. So looks sound a little better, a little catchier. So, you know, it just became more and more prevalent after practicing for so long. A lot of guys were talking about having low testosterone, having low energy, and having just lack of drive, zest. And as you know, it takes a lot for men to go to the doctor. You know, it's just like they have to be like completely broke down. And I started seeing more and more guys complain of this. And lo and behold, a lot more low doing labs, testosterone is lower and lower in younger and younger individuals. So I feel like there was just a need in the, I felt like there was also a way to improve what's currently being offered. A lot of testosterone replacement clinics that I've come across kind of tend to typically start guys at just a cookie cutter program. In fact, they put you on almost start every patient the same dose of testosterone.
They tell everybody they need it.
And tell everybody they need it and don't give any other options. I mean, thing is, I want to first understand, like, why is your testosterone low? It's not just like, here, you need to take this hormone. But also, these clinics would just automatically put guys in estrogen blockers. And that drove me crazy because estrogen is just like testosterone is not a male hormone. Testosterone is a human hormone.
Yeah.
Estrogen is a human hormone. Men need estrogen just as much as women. In fact,
that's why we live longer.
It's why women live longer. But like men, if their testosterone is too low, like a lot of these clinics, they put these guys on anastrozole, just blocks their testosterone. You have increased risk of dying of all cause, for like 300 17%. That's why that's how important estrogen is for men. In a lot of the anyway, so we started this company because we wanted to offer something for men by way of hormone replacement therapy, getting labs done. That's easy for you. We're licensed in 50 states, so guys can go into any like lab corp near them, get labs done. And then we also offer these peptide therapies, like we mentioned, BPC, 157, some of the growth hormone secretagogue peptides, and all these fun stuff that help with sleep, that help with libido, that help with, you know, anti-aging. Mm-hmm. So we just wanted to offer this at a more affordable and convenient way. And of course, all these guys are starting to kind of feel better, look better, and have energy. And the wives are like, hey, I want some of this. What's going on? So we started treating a lot of women. And it came to a point where we were treating a lot of women, more women through Blokes. And so we started Joy. Choose Joy is the women's side. So now we have Blokes and Joy, which are able to address all these, you know, optimization, longevity, kind of, we're after just helping people be their best version of themselves, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. We, you know, I'm in women's medicine, but same thing in women, like you get the wife eating right, optimize the hormones, all the things. And she's like, is there anybody here that treats husbands?
Right.
Like, no, we're a women's health clinic. But no, we do actually treat some men. But yeah, I think it's hormone replacement therapy. God, what a controversial area.
Totally.
You know, when I went through training, it was like, nobody gets hormones, only for hot flashes and night sweats for like the shortest amount of time possible. But just recently, even NAMS, the North American Menopause Society, you know, really, I think probably made one of the most open-minded statements I've seen in the last 10, 20 years, you know, saying that there really is a place, especially for bone health.
Totally.
These things are not FDA approved for treatment of like osteoporosis, dementia, heart disease, but they, just like we talked about earlier, you have hormone receptors in all of these areas of your body. And it's not just about low sex drive or having hot flashes or whatever it is. They have an impact on your brain, your heart, your bones. And especially for women, I mean, it's a huge deal. Like, who cares if you live to 100 if you, you know, like break your hip and you're in a rehab facility for like 15 years or something like that.
Well, in a lot of those studies that came out, you know, like the Women's Health Initiative and some of these other studies that kind of like, kind of put, you know, negative impact on hormone replacement therapy are kind of flawed and kind of didn't really do justice and but created so much fear in the medical
providers and patients.
Yeah. And then providers and patients, there's so many women like that, you know, there's history of cancer in my family. Yep. And so they don't dare, but I mean, if you actually look at the same thing with men, the increased incidence of Alzheimer's, of heart disease, of cancer, it actually correlates with a decrease in estrogen in these gals. and same thing with men, you see increase of prostate cancer, increase of heart disease, Alzheimer's, it correlates with a decrease in testosterone.
Yeah. You know, I'm never trying to talk a patient into any kind of therapy. Right. You know, my job is to say, here's the pros, here's the cons. And at the end of the day, you know, it's the patient's choice. But I have a lot of women that bring up this, you know, oh, my mom had breast cancer, so I'm, you know, really worried about this. And I'm in the back of my mind, obviously I have some sort of bias and I'm like, oh God, this woman would feel so much better. Right. You know, she's got vaginal dryness, she's having hot flashes, night sweats, she's not sleeping. But I always bring up, and I want people listening to hear this, is I say, well, do you drink alcohol? Well, yeah. Well, did you know that your risk of breast cancer is significantly higher by using alcohol, you know, compared to, you know, doing hormone replacement therapy? What? You know, just like the look in their face. Or, you know, your body fat percentage is XYZ and you're under muscled, and that alone increases your risk of not just breast cancer, but like every chronic disease. And so I think sometimes, you know, there are pros and cons to everything. But we have to look at the big picture, you know, what else are you doing in your life that 100%. Increases or decreases your risk of, you know, if you're working out and you're eating right and you're doing all these things, like those are the most ideal candidates for these types of therapies. But for other patients that aren't, sometimes it can still make you feel better so that you mm-hmm. can, you know, feel better about making some of those changes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of like, to me, it has to do with association and not causation. A lot of people, there's association with estrogen and breast cancer. And they just, you know, it's like in the medical community, association is causation. But what, the three most common cancers that are highest for insulin resistance is breast, pro- prostate and colorectal, and the most, the cancer that has the most incidence of insulin resistance is breast cancer. So like you said, it's like, look at all the things that are, that you're doing with your lifestyle. And a lot of times those women, they insulin resistant, belly fat, they, you know, may have history of PCOS. They don't even know they have PCOS. And hormone imbalances, you know, from that, PCOS is like the number one cause of infertility in women. And the root cause of that is insulin resistance or hyperinsulinemia and all those different things. We dig into that, but it's like, it's so many of this is like, it's just the misinterpretation of, once again, thinking that the body is a closed system, and that like one thing affects one thing, but it's a myriad of so many things, so many factors that play into it.
And just to set the record straight on this breast cancer thing, because there was a large meta-analysis that came out just this year. I shared a reel on my social media, if you want to scroll back through and find it for anybody listening, is that for every 1,000 women using hormone for every 1,000 women using hormone replacement therapy, there may be about one extra woman that develops breast cancer on hormone therapy. So just across the board. But when we look at the specific types of hormone therapy that these patients are using, we know from even the bad WHI trials and things like that, that it was only women receiving estrogen and progesterone. Not the estrogen only arm actually had a decreased incidence of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. But in women using estrogen and progesterone, if you have a uterus and you take estrogen, you have to take progesterone with it.
Correct.
There may be some patients that have had hysterectomies that still choose to take progesterone for a variety of reasons, because progesterone has some benefits. But in women taking estrogen and progesterone, it's very specific types of progestins. So synthetic progesterones that increase the risk of breast cancer. It hasn't been shown with micronized progesterone, or Prometrium is a trade name for that. And these are, and this is pharmaceutical. This isn't compounded bioidentical, blah, blah, blah. This is a prescription that I write. You can get micronized progesterone, and there's no study to show that that increases your risk of breast cancer. And like we've highlighted here, there's so many things that contribute to this bucket of risk when it comes to breast cancer. And so if you're really concerned about it, you really should be looking at, you know, what's your body fat? What's your visceral fat? What's your fasting insulin and glucose? Am I drinking alcohol? Am I stressed? Am I exercising? Am I getting enough sunlight? Like all of these things are ways that you can mitigate your risk of breast cancer. Even if your grandma had it or somebody had it in your family, there are obviously, if you have a gene, you know, BRCA or BRIP1 or something like that, that's a whole nother story, but, or a personal history of breast cancer. But, for people across the board, you know, baseline risk, less than 20% lifetime risk, you know, these patients are still great candidates for hormone therapy. Yeah. Okay. So let's pivot and talk about a really hot topic in medicine, and that is weight loss, right? Everybody, now we're hearing it on social media. There's these celebrities using this new class of medications called GLP-1s, which are a peptide, like we were kind of talking about peptides earlier, and they're becoming hot. I mean, I literally have patients coming in, hey, I saw this on TikTok. Can you get me this medicine? Bloke and Joy both are using these types of therapies. So can you tell people a little bit about these GLP-1s? And I'd love to expand on this, because I think this is not going away. It's
going
to be
not going away. I mean, 2023. In fact, the one of the name brand companies, Wegovy, they couldn't even keep up with the demand. So they had to like halt manufacturing. But a lot of us, you may have heard of Ozempic, which is kind of created for type 2 diabetics.
Yep.
When they were studying these GLP-1s, they found that if you were able to titrate the dose a little bit differently, it's amazing for weight loss for people with obesity. And so what these GLP-1s do essentially, it does a lot of different things, but what I like about it is it helps with appetite control. So it definitely helps you control cravings as well. There's GLP-1 receptors in our brain. There's GLP-1 receptors in our gut. So people feel more satiated. They feel also they're not craving those bad foods. And I've even had patients tell me they have like a cake or like a plate of cookies in front of them. They have no desire to eat it. Whereas before it's like, you know, just gobble it down.
Yeah.
And so in these GLP-1 products also help with insulin sensitivity. So it's going to help your blood sugar improve. So it literally is kind of like, in a sense, recalibrating your metabolism. So these patients that are on these GLP-1 agonists, what we do is we'll oftentimes check their blood before taking them, look at some lipid panel, look at some biomarkers of A1C, fasting glucose, and other markers in fasting insulin. And almost every one of them, we check 3-4 months later, improvement. And we've even had patients that didn't realize they were diabetic are no longer diabetic after taking these GLP-1 products after like 4 months, and they almost all lose weight. And so they've, like we said before, they feel like they're winning at something. They're having success in an area that they've never had success before. We have had so many patients that have, you know, literally have tried everything imaginable, and this is the only thing that's worked for them. So it's a super exciting product or products, because we have a couple different varieties of them that just really seems to move the needle in an area that people have struggled with for, in many cases, their whole life. So yeah, it's super exciting from a metabolic standpoint, from an aesthetic standpoint, and just overall health. I mean, there's other things, I think, downstream that we've seen that these GLP-1s can do. Like I said before, there are patients that have had these metabolic disorders, women that have PCOS, all of a sudden, no more symptoms of PCOS. Mm-hmm. Their periods are regular. They're not having PMS symptoms. It's really exciting.
Yeah. So, you guys, today for the semen analysis, I wanted to pull some studies talking about these GLP-1 agonists, and there's newer ones coming out that I can kind of allude to a little bit too, because I think this is really going to change the landscape of obesity medicine in 2023. So the one that we're talking about is semaglutide. So this was kind of the first one to the market. Now, originally in obesity medicine, a lot of the medicines we use were like phentermine, which is like a stimulant. Mm-hmm. There was Contrave. There have been weight loss medications that have come. But to be honest, we've never seen clinical results like we have with these GLP-1s. So they're originally studied for type 2 diabetes, and have now, semaglutide has been FDA approved under the name Wegovy for weight loss. So BMI greater than 30 or a BMI greater than 27 with a coexisting condition. So like you've got high blood pressure, diabetes, or something like that. And of course, they saw in these trials the amount of weight loss that the patients were having when they were studying them for diabetes. And so this was a study published when it was finally approved for weight loss. So once weekly semaglutide. So just so you guys know, what they did was they took a protein, a peptide, and they changed just a couple different modifications on it. Because normally the compound in our body that attaches to the GLP-1 receptor has a half-life of like 1 to 2 minutes. So it's very, very, very quick. So you couldn't reasonably give that medication to somebody when it only lasts like a minute. You'd have to dose it like every minute. So they modified this so that it has a longer half-life. So it's like, I think for semaglutide, it's like multiple days. It's like 180 hours or something like that. And so it lasts a lot longer. So that's nice that it's a once weekly injection as opposed to having to inject something daily or multiple times per day, because let's be real, most patients don't love the idea of injections, but it is a very, very, very small, tiny needle, like an insulin type needle. So it's injected once per day. And this was a phase 3 double-blinded randomized controlled trial, which is like the gold standard. And they looked at semaglutide versus placebo plus lifestyle changes, which I think is so important because this isn't total magic. I mean, you cannot use these medications and just sit home and eat pizza and donuts all day and think that you're going to like have the results that you want. But this trial had 1,961 participants in it, and both of the groups received counseling on diet and lifestyle. And the primary endpoints was basically looking at a reduction of more than 5% of weight loss, which I think this is an important thing clinically to think about, because if it only helps you lose a pound, then like, you know, and gets approved for that, then like what good is that? Especially if you're paying money for these types of medications. But basically what they saw was the mean weight declined more with semaglutide than with placebo. It was about 15% versus 2.4%. And in addition, more participants in the semaglutide group had weight loss greater than 5%. There was actually 86% of the people in the semaglutide group lost weight versus placebo, which would be basically just lifestyle intervention, was 30%. So it was like almost double. Wow. And so that's pretty incredible. Now, there were some limitations to this original study. About 43.7% had prediabetes, which to me is No surprise, because if you're looking at overweight people, mm-hmm. I mean, 88% at baseline have insulin resistance in the U.S.
Right.
And so not surprising that people who are overweight
right.
had some insulin resistance, which is fine because it was originally FDA approved for diabetes anyway. And then, of course, we always have to look at the population they studied. And the population was mainly female, white, and potentially highly motivated to lose weight, which makes sense, right? Who signs up for a weight loss study that doesn't want to lose weight? But anyway, so that was how it ended up getting approved. But now there is a newer peptide out called tirzepatide, which is FDA approved for diabetes under the trade name Mounjaro, and is in very, very, very quickly here, probably going to be approved, I think, any day now for weight loss as well. And so semaglutide works at the GLP-1 receptor. It's an agonist, so it turns on the GLP-1 receptor. Tirzepatide is a little bit different in that it has two mechanisms of action. So it is a GIP agonist, not to be confused with gastric inhibitory peptide, but that actually stands for glucose-dependent insulinotropic polypeptide. So basically it works at two receptors. Don't be confused by what I'm saying. It does have an extra mechanism of action compared to semaglutide. And this study that I'm referring to is called tirzepatide versus semaglutide, once weekly in patients with type 2 diabetes. So once again, this is a type 2 diabetic population. And this one was an international randomized open label phase 3, what they call non-inferiority trial. So they basically were saying, is this new peptide not as good as the original peptide? The dosing is a little bit different for semaglutide and tirzepatide. So they looked at multiple different dosages. But basically they found that all three dosages of tirzepatide, even the starting dose, was not inferior and also superior to semaglutide with respect to the mean reduction in the hemoglobin A1C, and they lost more weight. So it is yeah. better. It is more powerful. They lost more weight, better reduction in A1C. And I would say clinically in my type 2 diabetes patients that I'm treating now, I think it comes with less side effects. And yeah. that's one thing yeah. I want to highlight is yep. tell me what you've kind of experienced yep. with side effects, because totally. There's always side effects.
Yeah, so we have a lot of patients on both. So semaglutide, the most common side effect that we hear about is nausea, especially kind of, it seems to occur more early on when their body's kind of getting used to it, acclimated to
it. That's because it slows down the GI yeah, system.
And they feel kind of, and if an individual is eating the same way that they kind of always do, and they take the semaglutide, then it's going to be more pronounced. So if, you know, if that's the case, sometimes we'll order some Zofran. It's just to help them kind of get through that. And then there's just sometimes some people experience some low energy or maybe some constipation with the semaglutide, but low energy because semaglutide tends to will cause a little bit of low blood sugar, like hypoglycemic episodes. Whereas the tirzepatide, like you kind of outlined, we don't see the nausea, we don't see the low blood sugars. And the difference, I guess, overall is like there's less side effects with tirzepatide, but tirzepatide is more expensive.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of patients, you know, on both, and just wanting to try the tirzepatide. They've been on semaglutide and they're like, wow, I really like the tirzepatide, but it's a little more of a pretty penny. You know, so we've seen really cool benefits. I mean, obviously weight loss, but one thing I like to always share fun, exciting stories, because there are patients that come to us that, you know, have explained like, oh, I've lost weight. And, you know, like I said, like, and now I'm, you know, having normal periods. Oh, I've lost weight. And a couple of the guys before had erectile dysfunction and that has improved. And because of one of the components that these GLP-1s focus on and improve is insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of people realize that one function of insulin is that it stimulates nitric oxide production in the blood vessels. But when your blood vessels become resistant to it, you start to, you know, lose that effect. And so the more insulin sensitive you become, you regain that nitric oxide, that blood, that vasodilation. So that can, you know, help with heart health, help with brain health, help with erectile health.
Got blood vessels everywhere.
Yeah, blood vessels everywhere, right? So it's exciting. This is a really exciting space that we're in with these products. And I feel like we're just on the horizon of like more cool downstream benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've done these, you know, large trials on semaglutide and tirzepatide. Now there is a new one probably coming out in 2023. It's in phase 3 trials right now, called retatrutide, which actually works at three different receptors. So it's a GLP-1, a GIP, and a glucagon agonist. And so, The cool part about this is that as they come out with new ones, the old ones get cheaper and more available and more affordable to people. But this is not going away. I think it's really changed the landscape of obesity medicine and has given us more tools. And but I can't stress enough that still the basic things, you know, nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress reduction, all those things are still like the most important part of therapy for people.
I think really one cool thing to also share is in terms of GLP-1 like activity, if you were to look at the different macronutrients, they've shown that consuming carbohydrates, they see a little blip in GLP-1, you know, activation, fats a little bit longer, but the protein much longer.
Yeah.
So consuming, prioritizing protein, eating protein, it's one of the reasons why it helps with satiety, helps with maintaining muscle. So I think that's kind of goes back to the drawing. Even all our patients that we put on semaglutide, tirzepatide, it's like, look, you have to do the work. You have to prioritize protein. I want you to be moving. I want you to be.
And it is such an appetite suppressant that I've had patients who are like, oh, this is great. I can just like not eat all day. And I'm like, okay, well,
right.
That's cool. But except you're just going to lose a bunch of muscle. And that's the important part. Yeah. And they're starting to look at that. I mean, we have use of DEXA at Upgrade. And so we actually have quite a bit of data on patients using this. And there is some evidence to suggest that there's preservation of lean body mass with these GLP-1s, but I still think it's so important that you're getting like at least 30 grams of protein 3 times a day. That's like basement minimum, okay, you guys?
Right.
And that's like, okay, I'm just going to do the minimum amount to survive. Like that's what you have to, and it's best to spread it out like that. And resistance training. So, you know, we know that even patients that are just losing weight through diet alone, if they leverage that protein and do resistance training, they're less likely to lose their lean body mass. And you don't want to lose the weight and be skinny fat.
No. And you definitely can. I mean, I had a patient recently, she took the tirzepatide and she like texted me about 5 days later. She's like, I have no appetite. And she had enough wherewithal to understand, like, I need to drop my dose because I don't even want to look at food. But she knows, like, I she has to kind of eat the protein to maintain the muscle. And that was something that she understood is important because she's into being fit and in having, you know, muscle and having that muscle mass. But it's just, yeah, everybody's different. Everybody responds differently to these things. But at the end of the day, it's like appetite control is important, but you still need to get those building blocks.
Yeah. And that's like in the trials, they did see better results as patients went from 2.5 to 5 to 10 to 15 with tirzepatide, but more isn't always better. And so we have to find kind of that, you know, sweet spot where patients are able to get nutrition, they're not having side effects, you know, more isn't always better in those situations. But I had somebody ask me, they're like, okay, so that's how it works. It just makes you nauseous and constipated and you don't eat. And I'm like, no. It works at the level of the hypothalamus. And we're actually still, you know, just like with a lot of drugs, actually, sometimes we don't know exactly how they work and they still get FDA approved as long as they look safe. But you have GLP-1 receptors in the hypothalamus and they believe it works probably at the level of your brain chemistry, essentially. Correct. With, you know, your hypothalamus is kind of like your area of your brain that tells you to do things that make you survive, like eat and have sex and those types of things. So it's fascinating stuff. Okay, so tell people how they can find Blokes and Choose Joy if they're interested.
Yeah, pretty easy. So we have two different websites. The Blokes website is Blokes, BLOKES.CO. It's not .com, it's .CO. And then Choose Joy is Choose Joy, spelled JOI.CO.
Awesome. And a huge shout out to Amy Killen. We had her on the podcast. You guys can go listen to her episode. She is involved with Choose Joys now. She's your medical director of that arm.
Yep.
So big shout out to Amy there. Love Amy. This has been so wonderful. Dr. Folkers, thank you for coming. And
my pleasure.
And all your daughters.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're changing the landscape for them.
One of my daughters was awake and she wanted to come with me. So I said, well, I'll mention you wanted
to come. She should have come. It would have been fun. Yeah. My daughters are upstairs. You guys, we're recording in person. For those of you not watching the video, you're just listening, which I love in-person podcasts because I don't get to, it's very hard to sit and talk to a computer. It's great that I can have guests all over the world and do that, but these in-person podcasts are so much fun. But usually This is real life over here. There's usually like a dog running under the table.
I saw the dog run by.
Yeah, yeah, the dog running by. I think we had one daughter come down here during the recording. So it's real life. Yeah.
Love it.
We'll have a play date upstairs for the next one we do.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's been super fun.
This has been great. Thank you guys for listening. Share this with all your friends and family who would find it helpful. We always rely on you guys to help spread these messages all over the world. See you on the next episode.